South Carolina's got everything. Natural beauty, trendy cities, but you might miss your next big adventure in a smaller town. We've got you covered on the Palmetto Porch, Discover South Carolina's official podcast. I'm Devin Whitmire. Come with me as I venture off the beaten path and learn about these towns from the locals who know them best. Check out the Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information, head on over to scpalmettoporch.com.
I've got about 1,000 turkeys worth of tinfoil.
Okay. I have the world's most violent water polo match.
Excellent.
Date fight!
Hello and welcome to Date Fight on the 6th of December. It's a podcast where we look through history, we find the most exciting, important, funny things, and we say them to each other and then pretend to compete for your love.
I'm Jake Yap, he's Nat Tapley, and he knows loads about history, and that's why he's thrashing me. 6-2 is the current score for this week. Whoever loses, me, it's always me, pays the forfeit on Sunday, and that's fine because I have to bring some value to the podcast somehow. Let's get on with round one.
Yes.
Go on then.
I'm going to go to the 6th of December, 1956.
Okay.
At the Olympics in Melbourne, the Hungarian water polo team...
This is made up.
This needs some context. So, earlier in the year, the Hungarian Revolution had happened, where the Hungarians had tried to liberalise and get more democracy in Hungary, and the tanks were sent to put... The Russians sent tanks into Budapest on the 1st of November, and from where they were practicing, the Hungarian water polo team could see the smoke and hear the gunfire. They were in mountains above Budapest. So that's the backdrop to the meeting between the Hungarians and the Russians water polo match a month later. Also, the Hungarian water polo team hated the fact that the Russians had been spying on them and stealing their training regime. So it was a real grudge match, and so the Hungarians worked out that they could taunt and kick and punch the Russians under the water, and no one would know.
Taunting under the water. They were doing gestures. All right.
Yeah. Hungarians were currently the world champions in water polo, so they were
riding
pretty
high.
Excited yeah. by this. Anyway, they were winning 4-0 in the final minute.
Mm. Just like you.
When Zadar was marking Valentin Prokopov.
Oh, come on, this is made up.
Valentin Prokopov lost his temper and punched Zadar, who was the Hungarian captain, in the face.
What?
And there was blood everywhere.
Oh, wow.
And there was a riot in the stands. They all came down. The Hungarian supporters started shouting things at the Russian team. And the whole thing had to be called off. And the Hungarians were given the win because they were leading 4-0 in the last minute. But it was the most violent. It was known as the Blood in the Water polo match. Makes it sound slightly more exciting than it is. That makes
it sound like
Jaws.
It was awful because the referee was a shark. And it really
kicked
off.
It was 2 miles away when it started.
That's amazing. That's really cool.
That's fun, isn't it?
I am going to go to the 6th of December, 1884, when the pointy bit was put on the top of the Washington Monument.
Oh.
And the Washington Monument, it's made of marble and granite and bluestone gneiss.
Mm.
Very,
very gneiss.
It's the world's... I mean, we're getting quite granular on what it's the world's tallest nowadays.
Okay,
so it's the world's tallest predominantly stone structure. And the world's tallest obelisk.
Okay.
It's 555 feet.
Did it need the point on to become an obelisk? What was it before that?
It was still an obelisk.
Okay.
But the thing is, so the top mm-hmm. of the sort of needle
yeah.
is made of aluminium.
Oh.
Or if you're in the States, aluminium, and I'll come mm-hmm. on to that. At the time, it was by far, by a huge margin, the largest piece of aluminium ever cast
Ooh.
In one smelty thing, casty thing. So how high do you think that aluminium point is on the Washington Monument?
How like high this. Off the ground or how
no,
big
no,
the
how
actual
tall
point
is the point?
30 metres.
9 inches.
What?
Yeah. At the time, it was it cost a dollar an ounce, and this was 100 what? Ounces of aluminium. But it was very hard to get hold of, and the original quote was for like $75. And then the guy who cast it invoiced for $265. and literally, they sent some army boys down to say, what's this invoice then? What's going on here? And he said, you don't get, I couldn't cast it in sand. I had to make an iron cast, and that took a lot of time. It was really tough. And in the end, they agreed on $225. So it did quite well, I think. It was supposed to be a lightning rod.
Right.
And
does aluminium conduct lightning?
It was hopeless. In fact, when they went and sort of renovated it, they just, all the aluminium was just melted away, just all over the shop and stuff. So it was all pretty hopeless. But the aluminium or aluminium, nine inches of that, that was wild in those days. And they actually, for 2 days, it sat in the window of Tiffany's in New York. like a jewel. And later,
is it aluminium?
Even wilder, later they put it on the floor and visitors were allowed to carefully step over it so that they could tell their friends they'd walked clear over the top of the Washington Monument.
I wish I'd done that. I really want to have done that. Yeah. The closest I've got is Blackpool Tower, that bit with the glass bit.
But why aluminium and aluminium?
I don't know.
Do you know about that?
I don't know about
that. That's Sir Humphrey Davy.
Mm.
So his first attempt at it was to call it aluminium.
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 Hello.
This is in 1807. And then he changed it to aluminium and finally settled on aluminium.
Right.
And this was...
So they just never got the last memo?
Well, basically, his sort of peers, his colleagues in the world of science, probably the Royal Society, they preferred aluminium because it had more of a classical ring, just made up. Nothing to do with, like, its composition or anything.
Sounds like proscenium.
And it charmed with, like potassium, sodium, magnesium and all that, which Davy had also named.
Right.
But...
Does he try potassium?
Potassium.
Magnesium.
Potam. Yeah.
Magnum. Magnum.
Magnum. He invented the magnum. Yes. So... but why did it stay as aluminium in the States?
I don't know.
It was Webster's Dictionary, which in 1828 listed only the aluminium form in its pages.
Really?
And basically, in common parlance, it was aluminium in the States. And then whenever anybody went to check it, journalists, if they were writing about this miraculous new thing, they just go to Webster's Dictionary and go, oh, it's aluminium. And so because of that... it stayed like that. So it was only in 19...
So was it decision to exclude the inium?
It's thought that there was a progressive shift starting around 1895 when it went from ium to but you can see that at some point it got ported over from England as aluminium, which is what it then was. Yeah. Then England changed its mind. Yeah. No one updated America. Webster's Dictionary was published in the meantime. And the American...
I got that email.
Yeah, yeah. The American Chemical Society...
Am I copied
Society,
into this list of element names?
Do you mean the email? The American Chemical Society adopted it formally in 1925.
Yeah.
But that was just because everyone was already calling it aluminium and it would have been stupid.
But they are the chemical naming authority. They get to choose.
Yes.
Really.
In America.
It's not a democracy.
Well, in America. Okay. So the International Union of Pure and Applied Chemistry, and they do get to decide.
Well, those people don't understand chemistry, so they just do what they say.
They standardised it to aluminium in 1990. Mm. So there you go.
Well, I think you win that because that's...
Really?
Yes.
So happy.
Washington Monument is...
So exciting.
Big and important. I can't remember what I said.
Can I? Fine.
It was... Oh, it was Blood in the Water. It was the water polo.
Oh, yeah, that was good. But it was basically a Wetherspoons. Yeah, it's fine. Let's do the birthdays.
Birthday to Agnes Moorehead, who played Endora in Bewitched.
That's nice.
She was great.
Was she?
Yeah, she's the mother-in-law.
Okay. Oh, brilliant.
Also, happy birthday to Ira Gershwin. He's one of the two best Gershwins.
Don't make me choose. I can't, George.
It's George. Happy birthday to Yekaterina Budanova, who was a Soviet flying ace during World War II. She shot down a few Germans.
Well,
she was
done
one
her.
Of only two female flying aces in the Second World War.
Wow.
Germany had some women who flew planes, but they were only test pilots. They weren't fighting actual enemies.
Oh, that's charming. That's charming. You can't do any of the combat, but you can just get up in the thing. We'll just make sure it works.
Just make sure it's fine.
Don't want anyone valuable crashing.
This one's brand new. We're really not sure about how it's going to work.
Blimey. I wonder if those two women flying aces ever encountered each other.
I think they did. They went out together. Oh, the Russians, because they were both Russian.
Right. Okay, right.
Yekaterina Budanova and Lydia Litvinyak.
Wow. That's a film that needs to be made.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I've told everyone.
Idiot.
Let's hope Quentin Tarantino isn't listening to this podcast for many reasons.
I think it's pretty safe.
These guys, they've got a great idea on the podcast. I really like Ooms. I think I might date her one day.
Happy death day to Roy Orbison, who had his death day. Justine was having a comeback. It was a shame for Roy Orbison. He was just coming back into vogue when he deathed himself. He deathed himself right off.
He deathed it right up.
Happy death day to Jefferson Davis. He was the president of the Confederate States of America during the Civil War. And afterwards, he was kept in a small cell where the Pope wrote him nice letters and sent him a portrait of himself.
That's the best gift you could ever get.
After he was imprisoned, he went around to try and find jobs, but apparently no one would hire him because he was the president of the Confederate States of America, and no one thought that anyone in the North America would buy anything from him. So he tried to get sales jobs, and they were like, just looking at your CV, there are war crimes for 4 years in defence of slavery. Then after that, all seems pretty good. Well, it's prison.
Yeah.
And what do you do
with your free time?
Happy death day to Johnny Hallyday.
Oh, Johnny Hallyday! Il est le meilleur! Vous connaissez,
mais il est mort.
Vous connaissez Johnny Hallyday?
Je connais Johnny Hallyday.
Oh, il était le meilleur. Il est mort. C'est très, très triste. Il était un chanteur incroyable. Il a écrit des chansons inoubliables. Johnny Hallyday.
J'ai oublié.
You don't know Johnny Hallyday? But he's world famous in France.
Yeah, en France.
Every French person does that.
En France.
Yeah. Meilleur du monde en France.
And that's the death days.
Brilliant. Round two. Okay, I'm taking you back to the 6th of December, 1974.
Ooh.
And it was a great time for pop.
Oh my goodness, where is this going?
Well, you know, in 1963, the Beatles had started a tradition of releasing Christmas records for their fans.
Mm-hmm.
In 1974, George Harrison, of course, has a fresh idea.
Mm-hmm.
And releases something for New Year's Eve, thinking that's the pension sources.
that's really when people are looking to buy songs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're full of Christmas dinner, and they're thinking, what's the fresh new sound?
Yeah. Do you want to have a sing-song? Then buy Ding Dong Ding Dong by George Harrison.
You know those made-up names you did for the Magical Mystery Tour the other day? They were all significantly better than Ding Dong Ding Dong.
Yeah, I know. I did think that. It's basically a guitar rock interpretation of the Big Ben chimes.
Oh.
So it's like bow, 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 bow. Bow, 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 bow. Now, he says that he took the lyrics to Ding Dong, Ding Dong.
From Big Ben?
No. Oh. From engravings he found in his 19th century home, Friar Park, in Oxfordshire, which had a rather eccentric founder, a guy called Frank Crisp. Anyone with a noun for a surname is funny. You know, Vincent Hatt, it's just always funny. Frank Crisp was very into microscopes.
Right.
That's all I know.
Who did the engravings then? Was it Frank himself?
I guess, possibly.
Or his house guests?
But what I'm going to say is, I'm guessing engraving is quite hard and takes a long time.
Yeah.
Because Ding Dong Ding Dong as a song runs to approximately 3.5 minutes.
Okay.
And contains 18 different words. I counted them.
And presumably engraving on curves is difficult. So are they all letters which are pointy?
Yeah,
letters?
Probably.
N-A.
Yeah. There's a lot of ding dong ding dong.
Wow, but a G will be very difficult to
and
engrave.
And there's a sort of ring out the old, ring in the new, ring right. out the false, ring in the true, that sort of right. thing. And but so it totally boils down to 18 different words. It's like a Dr. Seuss song.
Oh,
he followed
wow.
it up with hat, cat, cat, hat.
Good old George.
Some of his songs were so great. I loved Fab. I thought that was a great song. All right. I guess I've lost this one as well, have I?
No, I'm not sure that you have. Well, I'm going to the 6th of December, 1922, the foundation of the Irish Free State. A year after the signature of the Anglo-Irish Treaty, the Irish Free State came into being. As a dominion of the Crown, the King was still the head of state, and the Governor-General was head of the government. But the Irish finally had a country of their own again after we'd taken it away.
I've actually won.
That's right.
Obviously, yours is much more important.
But it's much more
is
boring.
It, though? But is it? Yeah.
I mean, George Harrison's New Year's
18
single.
Different words. I mean, it like, and the trouble is, it was none of the 18 words that you need on New Year's Eve, like minicab, where, how much, yeah. help, hospital. Like, well done, though.
Thank you.
Good effort. But I actually do.
You're going to take a point?
I'm taking a point. I'm having it.
Right.
I'm having it.
Point.
I'm
what
sorry.
Are you up to now?
6-4.
6-4, all right.
But you can afford to lose these points. You don't have to fight me on
throwing these
this.
Points away. No, yeah, it's fine.
It's fine. But it does raise the
I mean,
stakes.
It raises
for the
stakes
week.
For, you know, all to play for.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it for today's Date Fight. Why don't you join us tomorrow?
I'd love it if you did.
Yeah, and, you know, you can always enjoy the back catalogue. There's loads of these.
Oh, there
now.
Are. This must be number 900 or something.
14, so yeah.
Years we've been doing
well this. Done. Anyway, thank you very much for your time. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye.